They traveled until it was too dark to go on through the rugged arroyo, then made camp. Since they were down where flames couldn't be seen for miles around, Kelly declared it was all right to build a fire, so they had a hot meal. The kid shared the last of his salt pork with his companions. As they sat around the dying fire drinking coffee, Valdez got a bottle of tequila from his saddlebags.
You can't have any, gringo.
Valdez poured some of the fiery liquor in his cup.
Because of you, my cajones still ache like the very devil himself.
That's fine. I don't much cotton to that cactus juice anyway.
I prefer Irish whiskey myself. I have a bottle in my saddlebags, kid, if you'd like a taste.
No thanks. Anytime there's a chance I might be attacked by a bunch of howling savages, I'd rather have a clear head.
Those Apaches don't have a clue we're here.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. They were careful enough to set up that ambush in the canyon. They're bound to know about this shortcut. Maybe they split their forces again and sent some men this way just to be sure nobody tries to use it to get ahead of them.
Well, Morgan might be right, Kelly. Maybe we shouldn't have built this fire.
It'll be out soon. And setting up that ambush at the canyon was different. The savages are cunning enough to do that. They won't think about setting up a trap in this wash.
It still might be a good idea to stand guard.
And that's exactly what we're going to do. We would have anyway. It never hurts to be careful.
That allowed Kelly to save face, the kid thought, and he let it go at that. He didn't have any wish to challenge Kelly for the leadership of this bloodthirsty gang of scalp hunters. Each of the five men agreed to take a 2-hour turn standing watch. Kelly decided the order of the shifts, and again, the kid didn't argue. He was given the third shift, the deepest, darkest hours of the night. Even though he wasn't a frontiersman by birth, he had spent enough time out there in recent years to develop many of the traits of one. Most of the time, he dropped off to sleep easily and quickly when he had the chance, and when he woke up, he was fully alert as soon as he opened his eyes. Chess had the turn before him. The man knelt beside the kid and pulled back a hand from touching his shoulder.
Your turn, Morgan.
The kid sat up and reached for the shell belt coiled beside his bedroll.
Anything?
Wild as it can be.
That was good. The kid stood up, buckled on his gun belt, and picked up his rifle. Chess had already stretched out. The kid walked over to where the horses were picketed and turned his head to take a look around. Light from the stars and a 3/4 moon was scattered across the wash, but there were a lot of thick shadows. He searched those shadows for movement and didn't see any. The kid whirled toward the sound as something launched off the top of the bank at him, blotting out the stars like a giant bird of prey. The kid's razor-sharp reflexes saved him. He twisted aside and brought up the rifle in his hands. The Winchester's barrel deflected the knife aimed at his throat. The Apache crashed into him, driving him off his feet. The kid managed to hang onto the rifle as he rolled over. Levering the Winchester, he swung the muzzle toward the warrior, who had leaped agilely back to his feet. The kid's shot had alerted Kelly and the other men, however, and like him, the perilous lives they led had given them the ability to wake up instantly and be dangerous right away. Kelly came up out of his bedroll with a revolver in each hand. Mateo fought the invaders on their own terms, gliding through the shadows like a phantom. The knife in his hand flicked out, snake quick, and pierced a heart. There were more Apaches up on the bank, and they stopped trying to engage their foes in close combat. They opened fire with their rifles, pouring lead down into the wash, heedless of hitting their own men. The kid dived behind a rock as bullets whined around him. He came up on a knee and brought the Winchester to his shoulder. His aim was deadly accurate, even in the dark, as he used the muzzle flashes as targets. As the kid reloaded, he glanced around to see where Valdez and Mateo were, but he couldn't account for them. It was possible they were among the sprawled shapes lying motionless on the ground in death.
Hold your fire! Lupe and Mateo are up there among them!
It was true. Several of the Apaches came hurtling off the bank to land on the floor of the wash in limp sprawls.
They are all dead!
Mateo!
Si.
Chess!
I'm all right, Kelly. Scratch or two, that's all.
Morgan?
Right here. I'm fine.
Valdez and Mateo slid down the bank.
I need a light. One of the bastards stuck a knife in my arm.
Chess, stir up the fire and see if there are any embers left. Don't worry, Lupe. We'll patch you up.
The only thing I worry about is if this arm stiffens up. This is my scalping arm.
Within a few minutes, Chess had a little fire burning again. By its light, he examined the deep gash in Valdez's arm.
You got any of that tequila left?
Si, of course.
I can put it to good use.
You mean to use perfectly good tequila to clean this knife wound? I would sooner have my whole arm rot off than waste any of that.
Well, I wouldn't. You're the best man with a knife we have. Well, when it comes to taking an Apache's hair, anyway. I reckon Mateo's got you beat when it comes to pure killing.
All right. Chase, do what you have to do.
Chess fetched the bottle from Valdez's saddlebags and poured the raw liquor over the wound, washing away the blood and hopefully anything else that might cause it to fester.
Sawbones would probably stitch that up, but I've never been much of one for sewing.
Mateo put a hand on Chess's shoulder and made a motion with his head to indicate that Chess should step aside.
Don't let that loco Indian near me!
He just wants to help you.
See, by torturing me!
Mateo's lips moved a fraction of an inch in what passed for a smile. In the end, after Valdez had downed several healthy slugs of the tequila, Mateo stitched up the ugly gash and wrapped clean strips of cloth around it, knotting them tightly in place. Valdez moved his arm around and winced at the pain that caused.
It hurts, but I can use it.
As if to prove it, he drew the knife from its sheath.
Let me add those scalps.
Mateo went with him and stood guard while Valdez went about his grisly work, stuffing scalp after scalp into the canvas bag. While that was going on, the kid, Kelly, and Chess hunkered by the fire.
You reckon there are any more traps like that waiting for us up ahead?
Not much chance of it. I'm not surprised some of those varmints were laying for us down here, but there were at least, what, 10 of them?
At least. I'm sure Valdez is keeping an accurate tally.
The rest of those Apaches probably think that was plenty to deal with any threat. They sure as hell won't be expecting any trouble now. This plays right into our hands.
The kid had already figured out how Kelly approached things. No matter what happened, Kelly was going to claim that was what he expected. And not only that, it was going to work out to their advantage. He was an eternal optimist, and a man who couldn't admit even the possibility that he'd been wrong about something. The kid didn't care. Kelly could think whatever he wanted to. The only thing that mattered was that they stay alive long enough to get those prisoners away from the Apaches. Valdez and Mateo came back to the fire. Valdez tossed the sack onto the ground.
12 more scalps, amigos! We have collected an even 20. A good day's work.
We can do better. I'd like to get everyone in that war party.
Ooh, that would be a small fortune.
Damn right it would. And who deserves it more than we do?
Valdez grinned, Chess smiled, and even Mateo nodded his head in agreement.
You've been good luck for us since you came along, kid. If those Apaches had cut your throat and jumped the rest of us without any warning, they probably would have wiped us out.
You're saying that I saved your lives?
I'm saying that you're earning your share. Nothing more than that. Don't go getting a big head. We've still got a lot of work to do.
By a lot of work, you mean a lot of killing.
Well, sure. Any of that tequila left?
They rode away early in the morning, leaving the Apaches' bodies for the buzzards, the coyotes, and the ants. Though they had survived one attack, nobody relaxed. Where there were a dozen Apaches, there could be a dozen more, or two dozen or three dozen, and none of the men wanted to take any chances. Nobody had slept much after the fight the night before, just fitful cat naps, while at least one man was always awake and on guard. The wash was still rough going, and the temperature climbed as quickly as the sun did. Not even a breath of air stirred inside the arroyo where the men rode. The kid was glad when they finally reached the end of it. There wasn't much of a breeze blowing on the desert, just a faint stirring in the atmosphere. But even that was enough to bring a little cooling to sweat-soaked skin. Not far away, foothills loomed, with the mountains behind them. The green pines dotting the slopes gave them a cool look, even though the air was as hot as ever. Up in the hills, in the shade of those pines, it would be cooler.
How will we know if we're ahead of the Apaches?
You see that saddle?
The Irishman pointed to a dip between two rugged hills.
The trail to San Remo goes through there. If there are no fresh tracks, that means we're ahead of the savages.
Maybe they went some other way.
We've been down here off and on for more than 2 years, hunting Apaches. I know where they go, kid. There are other trails through the hills, but that's the one that leads to the pass. And on the other side of the pass is the valley where San Remo is located, where Guzman's headquarters are. Any other route would take them days out of their way. They aren't going to want that.
What Kelly said made some sense, the kid supposed. The men drew their rifles as they rode toward the saddle between the two hills. They didn't want to ride up onto the rear guard of the Apache war party and not be prepared. Mateo inspected the ground closely. When they reached the top of the slope, they reined in. Mateo looked at Kelly and shook his head.
They haven't come through here yet.
The kid agreed with that conclusion. He hadn't seen any fresh tracks either. He turned in the saddle and looked back to the northeast. They were high enough that he could see the vast sweep of that godforsaken wilderness. Somewhere out there, if they were still alive, were Jess Ritter, Violet and Elsie Price, and Leah Gabbert. They were probably terrified, miserable, and humiliated by the degradation they had been forced to endure already. But the kid clung to the hope that they were alive. As long as they were, there was a chance to help them. He had been determined to turn his back on everyone's problems, including his own, but fate hadn't worked out that way. Kelly pointed to the slopes on either side of the gap.
Let's get up there and find some good spots. Morgan and I will take this side. Mateo, you take Lupe and Chess up yonder on the other side. Lots more scalps headed this way.
The kid and Enrique Kelly climbed about 50 yards up the slope, leading their horses. They reached an area that was thickly covered with trees, as well as having a cluster of boulders.
This is it. This is where we'll wait for them. We'll put the horses in the rocks where they'll be safe, and pick good firing positions here in the trees.
They led their mounts behind the boulders and picketed them, then returned to the thick stand of pines. The spot gave them a good field of fire over the entire trail for several hundred yards. The kid looked at the opposite hill and didn't see any sign of Chess, Valdez, and Mateo, even though he knew they were over there. Obviously, they were well hidden.
I've been wondering about something. Even with the 20 men we've killed, there are still a lot more of them than there are of us. What's to stop them from charging up the slopes and overrunning us with their superior numbers?
That's why we've got to do as much damage as possible as soon as we open fire. Pick your targets well, kid, and shoot fast. If we can put another 15 or 20 of them on the ground before they know what's going on, it'll spook them. They won't know how many men are up here, so they'll try to get out of this bottleneck as fast as they can and head on through the pass to San Remo.
If it doesn't work out that way, we won't stand much of a chance.
Nobody ever said this life would be easy. A man's got to fight, and he's got to take some chances if he's going to get what he wants. Otherwise, what's the point? Anyway, the only thing that's ever scared me is thinking about getting old and dying in bed. How about you?
That's not likely to happen.
Exactly. Don't worry about it, kid. Just enjoy it as it comes.
Now that they were in position, all they could do was wait. The kid had not been raised to be the most patient of men, but that life was in the past. Now he was able to stand still, alert, his eyes searching the desert to the northeast of the foothills. And after a while, sure enough, he saw something. It was just a smudge at first, with a haze of dust floating over it. But as it came closer, the vague, dark mass took on shape. It resolved itself into a large group of riders. As Kelly had said, the Apaches weren't in any hurry. They approached the foothills at a deliberate pace, most of them on horseback, but some walking, striding along tirelessly beside the horses.
What'd I tell ya? I was right, wasn't I, kid?
Looks like it.
The kid wished he could fetch his telescope from his saddlebags so he could get a better look at the group. He wanted to be sure the four women were with them, but there was too great a chance sunlight would reflect off the glass and warn the Apaches that someone was up there waiting for them. The kid knew he couldn't run that risk. He would just have to wait until they were closer before he looked for Jess and the other captives. Now that the Apaches were almost there, the waiting was harder. The kid felt his heart slugging in his chest as the first riders in the war party reached the slope and started up toward the saddle. His eyes narrowed with intensity as he swept his gaze along the column. Like a splash of light in the middle of surrounding darkness, the sun shone on blonde hair. The kid leaned forward. The riders came closer and shifted around, and suddenly he got a good look at Jessica Ritter. Jess rode one of the Apache ponies by herself. Her blouse was in tatters, and her skirt was pulled up since she rode astride. The kid could tell by the way she held her hands in front of her that her wrists were tied together. But her head was up, and he was confident if he was close enough to make out any details, he would see defiance burning in her eyes. A few yards behind her, two women with brown hair rode double on one of the horses. That was probably Violet Price and her daughter. Farther back in the column, the fourth captive, Leah Gabbert, rode in front of one of the warriors with his arm around her. Her long auburn hair hung over her face as her head drooped forward. Everything about her screamed despair, and the kid didn't figure he could blame her for feeling that way. As far as any of the women knew, no help was coming for them, and no one was even aware of their plight. It was understandable that they would give up, but from the looks of things, Leah was the only one who had so far. Once she realized that things weren't completely hopeless, almost maybe, but not completely, she might come around.
Kid, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
For a second, the kid wasn't sure what Kelly meant, but then he realized he'd been concentrating so hard on the women that he hadn't noticed something very important about the Apaches. There weren't nearly as many of them as he'd expected. It was fairly easy to make a rough count. The kid came up with 42. That was still overwhelming odds against 5 men, but he'd been expecting to see 75 or 80 Apaches in the group. Either the war party hadn't been as big to start with as the reports Lieutenant Nicholson had gotten indicated, or else the Apaches had lost quite a few men in the raids they had carried out before hitting the wagon train.
If we can wipe out half of them, they'll cut and run for sure. Then we can pick off some more while they're running. I'd have liked to get those other scalps, but this is all right. Wait until some of them have gone past us. That way, the ones in front will be more likely to run.
What about Chess, Valdez, and Mateo?
They won't open fire until we do.
Impatience gnawed at the kid's nerves. Jess rode past, her head turning from side to side as she studied her surroundings. The kid wondered if she was looking for an escape route. The prisoners were all in the front half of the column. Kelly let them go by. Then he looked over at the kid and nodded as he lifted his rifle. The kid rested his cheek against the stock of his Winchester and peered over the barrel. An instant after Kelly's rifle fired, the kid pulled his trigger. It wasn't a battle, at least not starting out. It was more like murder. The 5 men hidden on the slopes fired as fast as they could, pouring leaden death down into the gap between the 2 hills. The kid glanced across the way and caught a glimpse of Mateo darting from tree to tree, killing another Apache every time he paused behind another bit of cover. The kid realized what the Yaqui was doing. His actions made it seem like there were more gunmen up on the hill than there really were. The kid contributed to that illusion himself by dashing over to another tree and cranking off 3 swift rounds from there that dropped 2 more Apaches. At least a dozen of the Indians were down already, and more continued to fall to the deadly accurate shots of the scalp hunters. As Kelly had predicted, the warriors leading the column kicked their horses into a gallop. The kid saw that one of the Apaches had hold of the reins attached to Jess's horse and was leading it. He swung his rifle and aimed at his back. The bullet drove him forward over his mount's neck. The reins fell free. Jess's horse was running loose now. The kid stopped shooting to watch as Jess leaned far forward and tried to retrieve the reins with her bound hands. Before she could manage to do that, the horse's flashing forelegs tangled with the dangling reins. And suddenly the animal fell, sending Jess flying off its back and sailing through the air as the horse crashed to the ground. The kid's heart leaped with alarm as he saw Jess land in a heap and roll over and over until she stopped and lay in a limp sprawl. He didn't know how badly she was hurt, but she wasn't going to have a chance to get away now, unless he went down there and got her. He was about to turn away and run for his horse when he saw one of the mounted Apaches racing toward Jess's fallen form. The warrior looked like he intended to pick her up. The kid snapped his rifle to his shoulder. The Apaches were starting to fight back. They peppered the slopes on both sides of the saddle with rifle fire. That distraction made the kid look the other way for a moment. When he looked back, Jess was gone. Anger and disappointment shot through him. He looked past the gap to where a number of Apaches were fleeing across a broad stretch of open ground. He caught sight of Jess's blonde hair on one of the ponies. A flash of auburn told him that Leah Gabbard was still a prisoner too. He couldn't tell about the Price women.
Son of a bitch!
Don't worry, kid. We got more than half of them.
But the others got away with the prisoners.
I told you we know where they're going. We'll try to catch up with them before they get to San Remo. And if we don't, we know we can find the women there. You're sweet on one of those gals, kid. Is that why you're so interested in them?
I just want to help them if I can. But the scalps are more important.
That was an outright lie. But Kelly seemed to believe it. He jerked his head in a nod.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of them down there now, just waiting for Lupe's scalping knife.
After the shooting had been over for a few minutes, Mateo and Valdez cautiously made their way down the slope to check on the bodies and start the grim work of harvesting the scalps. Kelly, Chess, and the kid moved out into the open to stand guard while the other 2 men were busy. When they finally all rendezvoused, leading their horses, Valdez held up 2 bulging, blood-stained canvas sacks.
24 more scalps! We're gonna be rich men!
Damn right. I counted 42 of the savages. That means there are only 18 of them left, and some of them are probably wounded. That's mighty good work. I'm proud to be riding with you fellas.
You know how to find this San Remo place where Guzman's headquarters are, Kelly?
Sure, we've been there.
Well, if all the scalping's finished, let's get moving. There's still work to do.
Don't start giving orders, kid. But I've got to admit, I like your enthusiasm for the job.
Mateo had grown up in those rugged Mexican mountains and hills, so he led the way as the five men headed for San Remo. Not surprisingly, the Yaqui knew some shortcuts. But the Apaches would know those same shortcuts, Kelly warned, so it was possible they would reach the village first.
There's something I was wondering about. You said the Mexican government pays a bounty for Apache scalps?
Hey, that's right.
But the Rurales work for the Mexican government, and yet Guzman trades with the Apaches rather than killing them.
Guzman works for himself, first and foremost, and his men work for him. Technically, they draw wages from the government, but the paymaster from Mexico City doesn't get up this way very often. The politicians established the Rurales so they could claim they were protecting the people. But except for a few officers who take things a hell of a lot more seriously than they should, it's all a sham. The government doesn't care what the Rurales do. Guzman trades with the Apaches because it makes money for him. Also, as long as he's doing business with them, the savages will be less likely to attack him and his men when they're out on patrol. By which I mean, out hunting for slaves.
The kid could only shake his head in amazement after that long speech by Kelly. In his former life as a businessman, he had seen firsthand how corrupt the American politicians in Washington could be. But evidently, the South of the Border version put them to shame when it came to unabashed avarice. After everything he had experienced over the past few years, he was no longer shocked by how low human beings could sink. But occasionally, the depths of their depravity made him wonder just how bad they could get. Right now, practical matters were all that concerned him.
If the Apaches are already at the Rurales barracks when we get there and have made a deal with Guzman, how will you persuade him to double-cross them?
The same way men like Guzman are always persuaded. Money. We'll offer to split the bounty of the rest of the scalps we take.
What's to stop him from killing the Apaches, taking their scalps, and collecting all the bounty?
Like I told you, there's a truce of sorts between Guzman and the savages. You can't just kill them openly. That's where we come in.
So he'll make it look like you killed them, and he didn't have anything to do with it.
Aye, now you're catching on, kid. Everybody gets something out of the deal that way.
What about the prisoners?
Well now, you may be out of luck there. You never did say whether or not you're sweet on one of those women, but if you are, that's too bad. Guzman's already traded with the Apaches for them. He's not going to give them up. And if he hasn't, well, we may have to throw them in to sweeten the pot. Sorry, kid. One way or another, those ladies will be headed to Mexico City.
The kid shrugged as if that didn't mean that much to him. But inside, he seethed with rage. Kelly might believe that Jess and the other women were destined for short, degrading lives of slavery in Mexico City brothels. But the kid wasn't going to let that happen. They wound through the foothills for several hours, then climbed to the pass through the mountain range. Mateo dismounted to examine the ground in the pass. When he looked up, he gave Kelly a curt nod.
They're ahead of us. How long?
1 hour.
And that's long enough. We can't get to San Remo ahead of them. We'll just have to strike a deal with Guzman. That was what I figured to do, whether we got there first or not.
From the pass, they could see into the broad valley that stretched before them. The kid spotted San Remo in the distance. It was still miles away, and the square adobe buildings of the village looked like a child's building blocks that had been scattered across the floor in a fit of petulant anger. Mateo leveled his arm and pointed. Kelly leaned forward in the saddle and squinted into the distance.
Yep, there they are, all right.
The kid took out his telescope and extended it. He aimed it in the direction Mateo was pointing, and after a few moments of searching, he found the line of Apaches riding through the valley toward San Remo. All the Indians were mounted. The ones who had been on foot earlier had been easier targets for the scalp hunters, and their scalps were stuffed into Valdez's blood-stained canvas sacks. Jess and Leah each rode double with one of the warriors. The Price women still rode together on the same pony. Jess's shoulders had a dispirited slump to them. She didn't seem gripped with despair as strongly as Leah Gabbert was, but her failure to escape during the battle apparently had taken some of the wind out of her sails.
Do a head count. Should be 18 of the varmints left, if I counted right earlier.
Those numbers agreed with the kid's estimate, but he moved the telescope to the front of the column and counted anyway, just to be sure.
18.
Oh, it's a damn shame they're too far ahead of us to catch them before they get to Guzman's place. I think we could have handled that many of the bucks. Well, let's go. It's probably going to be dark by the time we get there.
They rode on, with Mateo still taking the lead. More mountains loomed to the west of the valley, and true to Kelly's prediction, the sun sank behind those peaks before the five riders reached the village of San Remo. Mateo was able to find his way in the dark, and after a while, the lights of the village came into view.
The Rurales compound is at the south end of town. We'll head straight there. There's not much to San Remo. Just a few stores and cantinas and a whorehouse.
As for myself, I would very much enjoy a visit to a cantina and a whorehouse.
In which order?
The cantina first, I think, to give me added strength for pleasuring the señoritas.
Be careful you don't drink so much you fall asleep before you even get to the señoritas, amigo.
But that will never happen.
What's this compound you mentioned?
That's where the Rurales barracks is located. There's the barracks building itself, plus Guzman's office, a mess hall, an infirmary, a powder magazine, an armory, and some storage buildings. There's a corral inside the walls, too, but no blacksmith shop. They use the smith in the village when they need new shoes for their horses.
How tall are the walls?
You're mighty curious about this stuff, kid.
I like to know what I'm getting into.
Well, I suppose that's reasonable. The walls are 12 feet tall and about a foot thick, with a parapet on the inside for riflemen and a couple of guard towers.
Sounds like a regular fortress.
Oh, it is. Guzman's managed to work up that truce with the Apaches I mentioned, but when the Rurales first came here, they had to fight off quite a few Indian attacks. That was before I was around these parts, but Mateos told me all about it. So they built the place to be defended.
The kid nodded slowly in the darkness. The information might come in handy. A lot of times, places that were built to keep enemies out didn't do such a good job of keeping people in. He hoped that turned out to be the case, because sooner or later, he was going to have to gather up Jess and the other women and make a break for freedom. The five riders skirted the village and approached the Rurales compound, despite the yearning looks Valdez cast toward the buildings as he licked his lips thirstily. Torches blazed on top of the walls, casting their garish, flickering glow over the empty ground around the place. No one would be able to approach the walls or the gates without being seen by the Rurales on duty in the guard towers. The front gates were massive affairs made of thick beams and iron straps. Breaching them would be difficult. Kelly rode right up to them. He saw torchlight reflecting on the barrels of numerous rifles that were thrust over the wall to point at the newcomers.
Tell Capitan Guzman that Enrique Kelly is here to see him. We have a matter of urgent business to discuss.
Stay where you are, Señor Kelly.
Oh, we're not going anywhere.
Are they always this on edge?
They're probably nervous because the Apaches are here. Having them around is sort of like inviting a mountain lion into your parlor. You never know what's going to happen.
You mean the Apaches are inside the compound?
No, they wouldn't all waltz in there and let the Rurales close those gates behind them. That would be running too great a risk. I figure their war chief, Salvatorio, and some of his trusted lieutenants took the woman in to make the trade with Guzman. But the rest of the bunch will be somewhere close by, you can count on that.
Kelly seemed to know what he was talking about, so the kid took him at his word. They waited, and only had to wait a few more minutes.
Capitan Guzman wishes to speak with you. We will take you to him.
A moment later, the massive portals began to swing open. As soon as the gap between them was large enough, the kid and the other four men rode into the compound under the watchful eyes and the rifles of more than a dozen guards in gray uniforms and steeple-crowned sombreros. Once they were inside, the gates swung closed behind them. The kid looked around. The whole compound was lit up by torchlight, and he was able to pick out the various buildings Kelly had mentioned, including the long barracks, the squat, thick-walled powder magazine that sat against the side wall, and a building that was more imposing than the others because it had a second story with a wrought iron balcony. Kelly saw where the kid was looking.
That's the Capitan's headquarters and residence. That's where we'll find Guzman and likely those women you're so worried about.
A number of the Rurales surrounded them as they dismounted. The men didn't seem threatening as they reached for the horses' reins. Kelly nodded that it was all right to turn the animals over to them.
These hombres know me. They know I've done business with Guzman before, so they won't give us any trouble.
Kelly strode toward the headquarters building along with the kid, Valdez, Chess, and Mateo. Several of the Rurales went with them, but their rifles were down and they seemed relaxed. They were escorting, but not necessarily guarding, the visitors. The headquarters building had a low porch along the front. The kid and the others stepped up onto it, and a door opened. A slender rurale who wore spectacles and carried himself like a clerk ushered them in.
Capitan Guzman awaits you and your friends in his quarters, Señor Kelly.
Gracias, Luis.
They followed as the clerk led them up a curving staircase with a polished wooden banister. From what the kid could see, the place was fancier inside than he would have expected a military headquarters to be. Of course, the rurales weren't exactly military, he reminded himself. They worked for the government, but the organization was a police force, at least in theory. When they reached the second floor, Luis took them along a corridor with a gleaming hardwood floor. Tapestries and portraits hung on the walls. Clearly, Guzman was a man who liked to surround himself with comfort and luxury. That took a lot of money and couldn't be done on a rurale's wages, not even an officer's. The elegant surroundings were ample testimony to Guzman's greed and corruption. A set of carved double doors stood at the end of the hall.
Señor Kelly and the others are here, Capitán.
Let them in.
Luis opened the doors and motioned for the visitors to go in. The kid wasn't surprised by what he saw when he stepped inside with the others. They found themselves in a parlor with thick rugs on the floor, heavy furniture, and walls hung with more portraits, along with a number of modern rifles and crossed sabers. It was a man's room, and the master of it stood on the other side of the room with a drink in his hand and a smile on his face. Guzman was tall and lean, with a thick shock of salt and pepper hair. His pointed beard gave him a satanic look. He wore an immaculate gray uniform with a crimson sash and a broad leather belt with a holstered revolver strapped to it. The captain wasn't alone in the room. With him stood a shorter, stocky figure in leggings, breechcloth, blousy blue shirt, and blue headband. The man's square, dark face was set in iron-hard lines of hatred as he gazed at the newcomers.
Señor Kelly, so good to see you and your amigos again. Tell me, por favor, why I should not allow our friend Salvatore here and his men to take you out and see to it that you spend long hours shrieking and dying.
Oh, you could do that, certainly, Capitan. But if you did, it would cost you money in the long run.
Salvatore just glared at Kelly.
There's no rule that says the people you do business with have to like each other, Capitan. I'm perfectly willing to back off and let you finish your transaction with Salvatore. Then you and I can come to an arrangement of our own.
My business with the chief is already done. He was just leaving.
You might want to ask him to wait around for a while. The proposition I have for you involves him as well.
Interest sparked in Guzman's eyes.
Salvatore's associates are downstairs eating. I'll have him taken to join them while you and I discuss matters, Kelly.
The conversation made it pretty obvious the war chief didn't speak or understand any English. Guzman spoke in rapid Spanish to Salvatore, peppering the conversation with Apache words he must have picked up from dealing with the Indians. Salvatore didn't look happy, but he nodded curtly and turned to leave the room. As he passed Kelly, his hand twitched a little toward the handle of the knife tucked behind his sash. The kid saw Kelly's hand shift slightly, moving closer to the butt of his gun. But both men controlled the impulse to kill, and Salvatore left the room.
Come, have a drink with me, my friends. And while I am acquainted with three of these hombres, this one is a stranger to me. I do not like having strangers in my home. Introduce us, Señor Kelly.
This is Morgan. Some folks call him the Kid. He's riding with us now.
Ah, El Kid. There have been others of your countrymen called by such a name, Señor Morgan. And they were all fast with a gun. Are you fast with a gun as well?
Fast enough that I'm still alive.
An excellent response. At the end of the day, survival is the most important thing, is it not? Come, Señor Morgan, have a drink.
Instead of the tequila, pulque, or mezcal the kid expected, Guzman poured snifters of what smelled like fine brandy. Tasted like it, too, the kid discovered as he took a sip. It was more confirmation Guzman had expensive tastes. They all drank except Mateo.
Now, what is this business you wish to discuss with me, Señor Kelly?
Kelly tossed back the rest of his drink.
We have 44 Apache scalps, Capitan. Are you still paying $100 apiece?
$100 in gold, in American dollars, yes. As long as they are scalps from warriors. Women and children bring less, you know.
These scalps all come from Salvatore's war party.
I thought as much. From the way the chief reacted to the sight of you and your amigos. The Apaches hate you even more than they hate us.
Oh, that doesn't bother me one blessed bit.
So you wish to collect the bounty on these scalps you mentioned?
That's right. and there are some more we'd like to collect as well.
More scalps, you mean?
Aye, that's right. Salvatorio and the rest of his men.
For a long moment, Guzman just stared at Kelly.
You are nothing if not audacious, senor. You know that a state of truce exists between me and the chief. Yet you come in here and ask me to jeopardize that state of peace simply so you can collect more blood money?
Don't talk to me about blood money, Capitan. We've both stuffed plenty of it in our pockets.
Go on. I cannot consider a plan if I do not know what it is.
I want a full bounty on the scalps we've already taken. But as far as the others, we'll take half the money and you can have the other half. And you can blame the killings on us. Like you said, the Apaches already hate us. They can't want us any deader than they already do.
What you suggest requires treachery on my part, Senor Kelly. I would have to betray the chief. I am an honorable man.
Oh, of course you are. But a man's word given to a primitive savage like Salvatorio, well, that's not really the same thing as giving your word to another gentleman now, is it?
Guzman thought it over some more, and slowly nodded.
What you say is true, Senor Kelly. If you were to do this, how would it be arranged?
The rest of Salvatorio's men are close by, correct?
They wait a short distance south of here.
You need to get them inside the walls. Once they're in, your men can open fire.
Which would be breaking the truce.
If they're all dead, who would ever know that? You could spread whatever rumor you wanted about it, and say it was me or my friends who killed them.
For a moment, Guzman looked like he could go along with that. But then his features hardened and he shook his head.
It will not work. The rest of the Apaches will not come inside the walls, even if we threaten the lives of Salvatorio and the men with him. The others would not come in.
Oh, you're not going to threaten anybody. You're going to give them something they want, and that's how my friends and I are going to earn our share of the bounty.
What do you mean by this?
You're going to give those savages exactly what they want.
Kelly lifted a hand and made a sweeping gesture, taking in himself, the kid, Chess, Valdez, and Mateo.
You're going to give them us.
No one can claim that you lack for audaciousness, Senor Kelly.
Now wait just a minute. Don't you think if you're going to offer us up as sacrificial lambs, Kelly, you ought to ask us about it first?
Don't I do the thinking and make the decisions for this bunch, Chess?
Sure you do. Well, this business just sort of took me by surprise.
Anyway, we won't be sacrificial lambs. More like staked goats. Staked goats with guns. Okay, Guzman, here's my plan. You can tell Salvatorio that you took us prisoner and decided to turn us over to him if he'll assemble all his men in the courtyard out there. Act like you want to make a big show of it. He'll understand that.
Yes, yes, go on.
It'll look like we're disarmed, but we'll have guns under our shirts. The Apaches come marching in, figuring they're going to have a fine old time torturing us to death, and as soon as they're all through the gates, your men open fire them from the parapet. We'll pull out our own guns and get in on it.
If I were to do this thing, all the Apaches must die. Everyone. None can escape to carry the tale back to their stronghold.
We can make sure of that, Capitan. Oh, they'll all die. Then we'll split the money for those scalps, and everybody's happy. Except for Salvatorio and the rest of his savages, of course. By then, they won't be feeling a thing. The rest of the Apaches will never know the truth. That is, if you can control your men and make sure they don't say anything.
My rurales are loyal to me. My thoughts are their thoughts. My words are their words.
In that case, you don't have anything to worry about.
It sounds as if it might work.
There's just one more thing. Salvatorio brought some prisoners in here with him tonight.
How do you know that? Yes, yes. You've been trailing them, I remember. You have seen the women?
Not close up yet.
They are all quite attractive. The blonde and the redhead, most of all. The blonde is not what you would call beautiful, but she has a fire to her. Any man fortunate enough to share his bed with her would have a challenge on his hands, mi amigo! You and your friends want to spend some time with the women before I send them to my associates in Mexico City, is that it?
Actually, we want to take the women with us, as part of our share in the payoff.
No, absolutely not! The women are going to Mexico City. As I said, you and your men may spend some time with them. None of them are virgins, after all. So that will not affect their value, but that is all. If you insist on this,
Don't get me wrong, Capitan. I'm not insisting on anything. It was just a proposal, that's all.
It was a foolish one. Do we have a bargain?
We have a bargain.
Very well. I see no point in waiting. Surrender your guns.
I don't like giving up my guns. How do we know we can trust this hombre?
Kelly, speak to this peasant who works for you.
Lupe, take it easy. We have to make it look good for the Apaches. If we're going to do that, we can't be packing iron. You can keep one gun. Just hide it under your shirt.
The Irishman glanced at Guzman to make sure that was all right. Guzman gestured in a superior fashion to indicate that it was. The kid found himself in the unusual position of agreeing with Valdez. He didn't like giving up his guns either, but Kelly had a point about making it look good. The kid took his Colt from its holster and tucked it behind his belt at the small of his back, letting the tail of his buckskin shirt hang over the gun butt so it was hidden.
Knives, too. Everybody shook all your weapons except one gun.
It didn't take long for the men to prepare. Guzman suggested that they leave their hats behind, too, and make their clothing look like they had been in a fight. They needed to look disheveled, disarmed, and helpless the next time the Apaches saw them. While they were doing that, Guzman called his clerk Luis into the room and explained the plan to him so he could pass the necessary orders on to the rest of the rurales. The young man listened intently, his narrow face expressionless. When Guzman was finished, Luis nodded.
Si, comandante.
He hurried out of the room. A short time later, 8 rurales with rifles showed up.
These men will escort you down to the courtyard and act as your guards. If they treat you roughly in any way, it will only be to make things look more convincing to Salvatorio. One more thing, Kelly. After our business is concluded, you and your men must leave and stay away from here for a while. I want no trouble at this time from the remaining Apaches in the area, so I must maintain the impression that I oppose your activities.
I reckon we can do that. Until next time, we have some scalps to sell.
You mean for us to leave tonight?
What would hold you here, Keith? I see. It is not what holds you, but rather what you wish to hold. The women. Am I correct?
You told us we could spend some time with them.
Indeed I did. And I suppose it would not hurt anything for your men to spend the night here. But we will discuss it when our business is concluded. Is that satisfactory for you, Keith?
You're the boss.
And you will do well to remember that.
Guzman gestured to the rurales.
Take them to the courtyard. I'll wait a few minutes and then fetch Salvatorio and the men he brought with him.
They left the room with the armed men following them.
I already did my best to get you what you wanted, Morgan. Don't go pushing Guzman or you'll foul this up for us. All he needs is an excuse to double-cross us, and he may try to do it even without one.
He promised us time with the women.
Are you that anxious to say goodbye to your sweetheart? I like you, kid, and you've been a good addition to the bunch. But I'll cut you loose in a second if I have to. See how long you last with Guzman on your own.
I'm not going to ruin anything. Don't worry.
Kelly's frown made it clear that he was going to worry, though. At least until the deal reached its bloody conclusion. Men were hurrying along the parapets and getting into position as the group reached the courtyard in front of the headquarters building. A burly rurale came up behind Valdez and without warning kicked the back of his knee, making Valdez's leg buckle underneath him.
Get down, dogs! On your knees, all of you!
Guzman had warned that they might be roughed up. Even so, the severity of it surprised the kid as another guard moved up behind him and rammed the butt of his rifle between the kid's shoulder blades. The blow knocked him to the ground. All around him, more rurales closed in and battered Kelly, Chess, and Mateo off their feet as well. Booted feet thudded into ribs as the rurales kicked them. As the kid rolled away from one of the blows, he caught a glimpse of the small group of men standing on the porch of the headquarters building. Guzman had emerged from the building with Salvatorio and 2 more Apaches. Salvatorio wore a grim smile as he watched the scalp hunters being mistreated by the guards. The rurales stepped back and covered the kid and the other men with their rifles. Salvatorio muttered something to one of his men, and the man trotted across the courtyard toward the gates. The Apache messenger slipped between them and disappeared into the night. It looked like everything was going as planned, the kid thought. Salvatorio had sent the runner to bring the rest of the Apaches to the compound, where they would take the so-called prisoners and lead them away to a grisly fate. Minutes dragged by while they waited.
What's going on, Kelly? Something's gone wrong.
Take it easy. It'll take a few minutes for the rest of the savages to get here.
From the corner of his eye, the kid saw Guzman and Salvatorio step down from the porch and walk toward them. He heard hinges squeal and lifted his head to see the gates opening again. They swung wide so the rest of the Apache war party could ride inside the compound. The Apaches dismounted, and together they walked toward their chief and the men who lay at his feet. Guzman and the rest of the rurales began to pull back. The minute the gates started swinging, the massive portals closed again. With all those things going on, the Apaches should have suspected a trick. But all their attention was focused on the scalp hunters they despised so much, and their thoughts were filled with the bloody vengeance they would soon take on their enemies. But something else was wrong.
Kelly, they're going to wait until the Apaches are all around us to open fire. We'll be killed too.
You're right. Guzman's double-crossed us. We'll see about that, by God.
Kelly surged to his feet, reaching under his shirt as he did so. Salvatorio was only a few steps away from him. The war chief's eyes widened in surprise, and he brought his knife up as if to defend himself. The blade was no defense against a bullet. The bullet blew a good-sized chunk of Salvatorio's brain right out the back of his head.
Open fire!
With Guzman's orders, the rurales on the parapet opened fire on the Apaches. Seeing their chief gunned down would make the warriors realize they were being betrayed, and they would fight back if they got the chance. Guzman wasn't going to give them that chance. The kid reached his feet only an instant after Kelly. His hand swept behind his back and plucked the Colt from under his shirt. One of Salvatorio's men brought his rifle up and tried to line his sights on the kid. The courtyard was filled with chaos as bodies, drilled by the men on the walls, slumped to the ground. The kid whirled toward the headquarters building. Jess and the other women were somewhere in there, he thought. With all the distraction, it might be his best chance to find them. The kid slowed as he watched the scene playing out in front of the porch. Mateo had reached the fleeing Captain Guzman and threw his left arm around the rurale's commander's neck. The Yaqui jerked Guzman around and put a knife to his throat. Where Mateo had gotten the knife, the kid didn't know, but the fact that the Yaqui had it didn't surprise him.
Tell your men to hold their fire.
Guzman's face had gone pale at the touch of the blade.
Stand down! Stand down!
The kid stepped up beside Mateo and held his Colt leveled in case any of Guzman's men tried anything. His eyes scanned the courtyard. All the Apaches were down. Kelly, Chess, and Valdez were on their feet and appeared to be uninjured. The rurales on the parapets watched in confused silence. As long as their commandante was being threatened, no one wanted to risk Guzman's throat getting cut. Kelly strode over to the kid, Mateo, and Guzman, and glared at the captain in accusation.
You double-crossed us, Guzman. I ought to have Mateo carve you a new mouth right now.
I attempted to double-cross you. It appears that I have failed. But you would have done the same thing, amigo, if you had seen the opportunity.
Well, you're probably right about that.
Do we still have a deal, since Salvatorio and all his men are dead?
I suppose so. Tell your men that we're not to be harmed, and don't try any more tricks.
No one is to kill any of these men. Lower your weapons and return to your regular duties.
The men on the parapet lowered their rifles, and with the exception of a few who would remain up there on guard, they began to descend.
All right, Mateo. You can take the knife away from his throat. Put your gun down, kid. But both of you stay close to Guzman. If he tries anything, kill him.
Guzman straightened his uniform jacket.
I am not accustomed to such rude treatment.
Better than being shot in the back by somebody who's supposed to be your partner.
We should put the past behind us.
You know, I believe you mean that.
Of course I do. A wise businessman tries to seize whatever opportunity he can. But once it passes, he puts it out of his thoughts.
Fine. We're partners again. We can trust each other.
But of course.
Watch him anyway.
The kid and Mateo both nodded.
Come inside. I will have supper prepared for us. And there is still the matter of the women, eh?
Aye, the women. Can't forget about them, can we?
Kelly turned to Valdez.
Lupe, can you handle getting those scalps by yourself? Mateo's going to be busy.
Certainly. It will not take long.
Kelly nodded to the open door of the headquarters building.
Let's go.
They went inside with the kid and Mateo flanking Guzman. Kelly and Chess followed. The clerk, Luis, stared at them goggle-eyed from the door of the office.
Where are the women?
They are locked in one of the storage buildings. They have not been harmed. Not by me or any of my men, that is. I cannot speak for the treatment they received at the hands of the Apaches.
You're going to give us quarters for tonight and have the women brought to us.
I do not like to be dictated to, senor, no matter what the situation.
Consider it a request, then. And here's the situation, as you call it. Mateo's going to be within arm's reach of you every second until we can ride out of here in the morning. No matter what trick you might think about trying, you can't do it fast enough to keep him from killing you. Even if all of us die, you will too.
I believe that all thoughts of treachery were behind us now. You wound me deeply, Senor Kelly.
Not as deeply as Mateo will if you try anything funny.
You will honor the terms of our bargain?
Full payment for the 44 scalps we brought in, half payment for the ones Valdez is harvesting in the courtyard now. Sure, that's agreeable. And you throw in safe conduct away from here tomorrow.
That goes without saying.
Let's say it anyway.
Safe conduct.
Once we're gone, it might be smart for us to steer clear of these parts for a while. I imagine the rest of the Apaches won't be very friendly toward us once you finish spreading the word about how we killed Salvatorio and his entire war party.
That would probably be wise.
We'll go back across the border for the time being. We'll be back sometime, though. You can count on that. And we'll have more scalps with us when we come.
I look forward to doing business with you.
Now, about those women.
Of course.
Guzman quickly issued the orders to his aide. Luis hurried out.
There are rooms upstairs where you can spend the night. Down the corridor, the other way from my own quarters. Luis will show you when he returns.
Guzman glanced at Mateo, who still stood close to him, knife in hand.
The Yaqui does not wish to have one of the women for himself?
Mateo's not interested in white women. Killing our enemies appeals more to him.
Expressionlessly, Mateo peered at Guzman and ran a thumb along the edge of the blade, just enough to slice the top layer of skin. The kid's brain had been working furiously while he listened to the conversation. The women were being brought to him and the others, which was good, because he wouldn't have to hunt for them. On the other hand, he would have to smuggle them out of Guzman's headquarters somehow, after first getting them out of the hands of Kelly and the other scalp hunters. That wouldn't be easy. And if he succeeded in that, it was entirely possible Guzman would send the Rurales after him, and Kelly and his friends might join the pursuit too. Kelly would want revenge for what he would consider a double cross. The border was miles away across a burning desert. The odds against the kid and the four women getting there alive were almost insurmountable. But he wasn't going to let that stop him from trying. His life no longer meant much to him, but maybe his death could accomplish something good. With the sound of the footsteps, the kid's heart beat heavily in his chest as he looked in that direction. Luis came into the building first, but right behind him, walking with her eyes downcast, came Jessica Ritter. Jess's lank, fair hair hung in front of her face. One of the Rurales was beside her with his free hand clamped around her arm. Jess's clothes were in tatters, and the pale flesh that showed through the rents was mottled by bruises. Obviously, she had been through hell. The same was true of the other women who were brought into the room behind her, each of them being hauled along by a Rurale. Violet Price bore little resemblance to the friendly, cheerful, middle-aged woman who had provided several meals for the kid. She was haggard and barely able to stumble along. Her daughter Elsie was in better shape, but was still bruised and terrified. Leah Gabbert came last, her auburn hair a wild mass of tangles and a haunted look in her eyes as she jerked her head back and forth rapidly. The kid wondered if the ordeal had driven her mad.
You see, I keep my end of the bargain, Senor Kelly. You and your men may choose among these lovely ladies. They are yours for the night.
That sounds good to me. Since I'm the ramrod of this outfit, I'll pick first. And I want the blonde. If that's all right with you, Morgan.
Kid?
So this is the one who's special to you, eh, kid? Well, that's too bad, because she's going upstairs with me.
It took a lot of effort, but the kid kept his face expressionless as he shrugged his shoulders.
Fine. Doesn't really matter to me which one I get.
The pain that flashed in Jess's eyes at those callous words stabbed him to the core. He didn't think it was wise for Kelly to know how much she meant to him.
That's good to know. Makes me trust you a little more, kid.
Kelly reached out, took hold of Elsie Price's arm, and thrust her toward the kid.
Here, take this young one. She's closer to your age anyway.
Sounds good.
He slipped an arm around her shoulders.
You want to come upstairs with me, honey?
He felt her trembling, but other than that, she didn't respond.
Answer the man.
Yes. I want to go upstairs with you, mister.
Guess that leaves you with your pick of these other two, Jess.
Well, I'll take the older one. The red-headed gal looks loco. Lupe can have her when he's finished getting those scalps.
All right. The red-headed girl will stay here with you and Mateo, Capitan, until Lupe is done. The rest of us have things to do.
Of course. Luis, show them to their rooms.
As they started up the curving staircase, the kid tightened his arm around Elsie's shoulders and tried to ignore the hate-filled glances Jess kept shooting back at him. Sooner or later, she would understand, he told himself. When he got the prisoners out of there, she would realize he hadn't meant what he said. In the meantime, he could put up with knowing that she thought he was just about the lowest snake on the face of the earth. When they reached the landing, Luis took them down the corridor in the opposite direction from Guzman's quarters. As the captain had said, there were a number of empty rooms up there. The kid supposed that important visitors, men who had come to San Remo to buy slaves from Guzman, used them from time to time. He wished there was some way to put a stop to that sordid operation, but the task was too big for him. He would have to settle for rescuing the four women, if he could even pull that off. With several rurales tagging along as guards, Luis showed the men to their rooms and lit lamps in each one.